Security and Intelligence Council Meeting Room, Senate Building.
I think you could do this, Mara, said Chief Omis. The enemies we face won't always be conventional armies, or even in a separate theater of war, so we feel we need a separate arm of the Defense Force concentrating on domestic security.
Mara didn't move a muscle. She sat with her legs tightly crossed and arms folded, and Jason felt her dismay from across the room without even wanting to. He tried not to look at Luke, who was standing by the window, staring out at the Coruscant skyline.
Why me? Said Mara.
You've been an intelligence agent, said Omis.
The head of Security and Intelligence Council, Senator Gavil Gasil, sat to one side of Omis in silence, scrutinizing Mara, and then looking slowly toward Jason and Luke as if he had never seen a Jedi before. Mara's reluctance wasn't even disguised.
I'll do my duty for the Alliance, she said, but I'm not sure I'm psychologically equipped to head up, well, a secret police force. There's no other word for it. Spying is one thing, and maybe even assassination, but this is new to me.
We spent so much time dealing with the Yuuzhan Vong that we lost our focus on threats closer to home, said Gasil. But I'm old enough to remember that when terrorist activity starts, you need to move fast before it spreads and networks get established.
If they aren't already, thought Jason. The world brain tells me they're on the move, gathering, meeting.
Let me think about it, said Mara.
Luke turned slowly, hands deep in his pockets, and stared out the window. And for a moment, Jason wondered if he was going to volunteer instead.
We'll be going then, Chief, said Luke. Let's see how the next few days pan out, and then revisit this.
He nodded politely to Jason and left with Mara. She gave Jason a glance over her shoulder and smiled anxiously. Omis waited for them to leave, and then looked at Jason.
I can understand everyone's reluctance, Omis said.
Jason thought now was as good a time as any to ask again.
Have you had any further thoughts on the matter I suggested the other day, sir?
Omis's mind was clearly elsewhere.
Hitting the shipyards?
Yes.
I'll discuss it with Admiral Pellion. If he thinks it has merit, I'll table it with the Defense Council.
Thank you.
Jason should have gone back to his apartment and used his time to teach Ben more of the subtle techniques of the Force, but he admitted to himself that he was as impatient as his young pupil. Jason walked toward the restored Jedi Temple. It was there as it had been for millennia, albeit in a new, modern guise, and the destruction by the Yuuzhan Vong seemed no more than a brief absence, the guttering of a candle in a breeze. Jason walked along the wide promenade to the entrance. The temple's architecture and interior design were aggressively modern, but key parts of the layout had been retained. The marble floor was a replica of the original. It struck Jason as obsessive rather than reverent, as if the Jedi Order had never wanted change and challenged to interpret its sense of permanence. Jason paused, hands meshed, and saw something he had never seen before. He saw ambition. He saw a love of power and status. He saw a statement of government, of inexorable permanence. We're back. We're not going to be swept aside again. The stone almost spoke to him. He couldn't shake off the clear impression of the exercise of power and the love of it. And to think he'd been afraid that he was being lured to the Sith by a lust for power. Marble and pleakwood created an understated, cool interior, interrupted occasionally by faithfully copied busts of great Jedi masters, displayed in niches in exactly the same places as they had been before the Yuuzhan Vong, and before the temple had burned in the purges following Palpatine's seizure of power. Jason paused again as he walked through the lobby. Jason knew exactly where he was now, and it scared him. He had a finely tuned sense of where he was in space. Had he rolled back time by 59 years to this exact distance from the planet's core, this exact distance from the planet's north pole, this very point in three dimensions, he would have been walking with his grandfather, Anakin Skywalker. But I can walk back in time. Jason could time drift. He was almost too afraid to, but he did, almost without thinking. As he projected himself into the past and merged with its reality, he saw a young blonde Jedi with his lightsaber drawn, flanked by troops in white armor. Jason was looking at him from behind,
He could see the muscles in his jaw twitching as his head turned, seeking something. He could feel his dread and determination. Anakin.
Anakin Skywalker held his lightsaber two-handed, and for a moment, Jason was one with his grandfather's emotions. He was overwhelmed by a dread and reluctance, the same dread and reluctance he had felt himself when Lumaya told him his destiny. Jason felt, too, a crushing sense of something terrible and deadly about to happen. He touched Anakin's emotions again, comparing them with his own, and then he felt something that was not within him at all. It was desperate, terrified loss. For a second, he couldn't identify it. Then it settled and became clear in the form of a tight sensation in his throat and the pressure of tears behind his eyes that stung and burned. It was very like the brief misery he had felt when he left Tenel Ka and his daughter. Anakin was facing separation from Padme and was terrified by it. But it wasn't a moment's emotion for his grandfather. It was the whole of him. Anakin had been driven to the dark side by agonized love. The revelation stunned Jason because it was so narrow and so selfish. Relief flooded him. This is different. That isn't what I feel or what's driving me. And right then, he wanted to talk to his grandfather more than anything he could imagine. It was a burst of love for a man he had never known, a man who would help bring balance to the Force. You're insane. You're going too far. Don't even think about influencing the past. But he had absolutely no idea what the past really was, right up to the point where he saw the younglings approach Anakin, scared but clutching their lightsabers, telling him there were too many soldiers for them to drive off. Anakin stared down at them. Then he drew his own saber, and Jason tasted absolute grief and shame and duty. He was hunting Jedi. He was killing them somehow for Padme's sake. His reasoning was vivid and focused. Jason knew that Anakin had done this, but seeing it, feeling it, and living it was agonizingly new and shocking because the emotion was so desperately animal in its intensity. No, I'm not feeling this. It's one of Lumaya's vile tricks. I'm not seeing this. Then, one of the armored troopers appeared, raising his rifle, and Jason jerked himself out of time and back to the present, heart pounding. Grandfather! Jason wanted to vomit. He centered himself with every scrap of effort he could muster and waited for the turbo lift, eyes averted when anyone passed. He felt they could see the horror in his soul. But of course, he was now adept at concealing even that from other Jedi. I'm not Grandfather. The lift seemed to take forever to arrive. I was meant to see how low he fell. He hit the control with the heel of his hand, fighting tears.
Come on, what's keeping you?
Two apprentices stared at him, but hurried past.
That's my proof. That's my pain. I have to embrace it to understand that I am not making my grandfather's mistake all over again.
Jason knew what it was to love, and he was older and far more experienced than Anakin Skywalker had been then. He could handle what was happening to him now. He would never do another's bidding, and he could become a Sith without fear of being sucked down into something evil. He still didn't relish the duty, but it was a duty, not a delusion. He wasn't repeating his grandfather's mistakes. He was absolutely certain of that now. Relief, unbearable sorrow, and disbelief fought in him. He might have asked his grandfather for his reasons, but that was for his personal comfort and not for the purpose of peace. So it would have to wait. That was something for later. Once he had become a full Sith Lord and brought peace and stability to the galaxy at last. By then, he might be ready to deal with the truth of his grandfather's shame. Finally, the turbo lift doors opened. Jason ascended to the recreated room of 1,000 fountains to sit among the plants and pools to meditate. He knew what he had to do now. He knew he had to test Lumaya to be sure she could help him achieve full Sith knowledge, as she promised, or if she was following her own agenda and planning to exploit him. Crossing his legs in a meditation position, he let his consciousness reach out across the Force, not as an open hand, but as a commanding fist. Lumaya,
Come here, Lumaya. Come to Coruscant and answer to me.
Corellian Sanctuary, Coruscant.
It was one of the saddest places that Ben had ever visited. He felt the loneliness the moment he got within 50 meters of the Corellian Sanctuary. Outside, three men, one of them very old, were scrubbing away at bright red paint that had splashed and run down the polished gold and black marble inlay of the little domed memorial. They looked up at him as he approached, frowning and suspicious. Ben wasn't sure what to say.
"What do you want, kid?" said the youngest man.
"I wanted to look inside, sir. Is that okay?"
"You a Jedi?"
The brown and beige robes were a giveaway.
"Yes."
"Why do you want to see inside?"
"My uncle's Corellian. May I go inside?"
The men looked at him, then at each other.
"I'll take him," said the old man.
Ben hesitated on the threshold. The doors of the arched entrance looked as if they'd been forced open. He followed the man into darkness, and when his eyes adjusted, he was in a black-walled chamber that swallowed up the light. Then he looked up. The dome ceiling was studded with sparkling chunks of rough diamond set in constellations.
"They compressed the carbon left from cremations," said the old man. "Turned it into diamonds. That's the night sky as you'd see it from Corellia."
"Why?"
"Corellians who couldn't get home during the New Republic."
The old man kicked through the rubble on the floor of the chamber. Some chunks bore black paint, signs of how the vandals had hacked at the plaster.
"Next best thing to resting in home soil."
"Did you find all the stones they took out?"
asked Ben.
"No."
"Who'd want to steal diamonds made from bodies?"
The old man frowned at him.
"Some people don't care about that kind of thing."
The man was hurt and angry. Ben could understand that. He bent down and helped him pick up the rubble, checking each chunk for fragments of diamond, because that was, after all, a person. While they cleared the chamber, one of the younger men wandered in and stood watching. He was about 18, with short blonde hair scrunched into spikes.
"We can't stand by and let them get away with this," he said.
"Who's them?"
said Ben.
"Coruscanti. You know who did this? Then you ought to tell CSF." "Yeah, like they'd really take that seriously. I don't think. Not when they're looking for Corellians who planted a bomb."
Ben went to sweep up the remaining dust, but the old man took the broom from him and did it himself. Ben sensed some resentment. He bowed his head, even though the man had turned his back on him, and walked outside into daylight that seemed painfully bright. The blonde man went with him, and they sat down on honey-colored marble steps that led up to the sanctuary.
"I'm Barrett Say,"
said the blonde man, and held out his hand. Ben shook it gravely.
"I'm Ben." "So you've got Corellian relatives?"
"Yeah."
"Whose side are you on?"
"I'm a Jedi. We don't take sides."
"You reckon?"
Barrett laughed, but not as if he thought it was remotely funny. Ben probed cautiously.
"They said on the news that the bomb went off in a room of a Corellian man over here on business." "They would say that, wouldn't they?"
Barrett had his elbows braced on his knees, right hand clutching his left wrist, looking around at pedestrians walking along the nearby promenade.
"I bet they did it themselves."
"Who's they?"
"The government, CSF, Galactic Security. They do that kind of spy stuff. If they plant a bomb and blame it on us, then it gives them an excuse to attack Corellia."
"What do other Corellians here think?"
Barrett shrugged.
"There's a lot of us, and enough don't want to be dictated to by the Galactic Alliance."
Ben took that to mean that there would be a war after all, just as Jason had warned, and just as Ben had felt when he sensed the anxiety in the Force.
"So you'll be going back to Corellia to join the armed forces, then?"
Barrett lowered his voice.
"Why do that, when we can fight better here?"
Municipal Port Lower Coronet, Corellia.
Han Solo had a smuggler's fine-tuned sense for avoiding trouble. But he was a little out of practice after years of respectability, and there was definitely a different skill needed to evade detection in a city in peacetime. He made his way to the Millennium Falcon under cover of darkness to check on the hyperdrive. It still needed work. the Falcon, nestled among a motley array of vessels, making what should have been an easily recognizable ship just one dented, scraped crate among scores of freighters, modified fighters, speeders, taxis, landing craft, and any number of heavily modified, shabby, and unidentifiable craft. Han ambled around the starboard side, pressed the security pad in his pocket, and lowered the ramp to board her. Once in the cockpit, he switched her to tick over, and the array of status lights and readouts flickered into life. He patted the console bulkhead lovingly.
"Hi, baby,"
he said.
"How you doing? Let's make you all better."
The hyperdrive was still off balance. The coils and injectors needed a little more care spent on them to make sure they released exactly the right amount of energy into the drive at the proper rate. Han checked the automated system that sent sound waves through the hull to check for stress microfractures in the casing and airframe. There it was, stressing around the drive housing. He needed to replace brackets and bolts before he could risk taking the Falcon to full speed. He grabbed some tools and eased himself into the drive access space, head first, to see for himself. Han tested the torque on the housing bolts with a hydro spanner and noted the illuminated display on the handle. There was a little play in the bolts.
"Oh, baby, I've neglected you."
He set the spanner to extract the bolts one by one, let them fall into his hand, and patted them out with a makeshift pin of soft alloy before screwing them back in. That would cut down on the movement until he could find the right spares.
"I promise, I won't let you get into this state ever again."
"Touching," said a voice above him, and he jerked into a ball instinctively, knees tight to his chest. As the flare of blaster fire hit the deck, a hand span away from where he'd been lying. He rolled under the housing and reached for his holdout blaster. Another bolt sizzled on the bulkhead to one side of him. He smelled singed paint and ozone. He was right under the housing now. Too far under for whoever it was to get a clear shot at him, unless they got down flat on the deck and fired at floor level. Well, it wasn't Fett, that was for sure.
He'd have been dead by now if it had been.
Han rolled over onto his belly, with one elbow braced on the deck of the compartment to propel himself on the smooth surface and his blaster in his other hand. It was hard to see at this angle, but he spotted movement, and he knew he was looking at Boots.
"Come on out, Solo," said the voice.
It was a man, probably young. He didn't identify himself, so he wasn't Corsac. Chancer. Out for a bit of glory, a reward.
"Thought nobody would spot your ship, did you?"
Han was trapped under a hunk of metal with only one way out. That was toward his attacker. Fine, he could do that too. It only made him mad. Mad that he hadn't set the intruder alert again. And even madder that someone was on his ship. It was the ultimate insult. Lying flat under the housing, he had a 150-degree arc in front of him. He flicked the blaster to the continuous fire setting with his thumb and braced his forearm on the deck. There was blood on the back of his hand. He must have scraped himself on something sharp. He hadn't felt a thing. What if this guy had a gang backing him up?
"Come and get me, kid."
Boots moved again. Han swung a stream of fire left to right just to make sure he hit something. There was a loud shriek of surprised pain.
"And your dancing days are over."
Someone thudded onto the deck with a grunt of pain, and blaster fire hit something because Han saw the flash and smelled the burn. But he hadn't killed anyone, and that meant he was still pinned down under the drive housing. He was working out just how fast he could get from under the housing and realizing it wouldn't be a fast exit at all when he heard a startled,
"Huh?"
and a distinctive and very welcome sound. "You can come out now, old man." The voice was Leia's. Han detected a slight edge to it. "I've cleared up the mess for you."
"Thanks."
"Ever seen a Both and Well spider?"
Leia peered through the gap on all fours.
"They fight like you. They fire strands of caustic silk out of their burrows at predators. I couldn't help but be reminded. That and the gangly legs."
Han dragged himself out, catching his scalp on something and cursing. When he straightened up, Leia was standing over what Han could only describe as a dead guy. He was in civilian clothing and looked about 30. He wouldn't be seeing 31, that was for sure. Leia held the lightsaber hilt in one hand, visibly jumpy.
"I think we better disappear right now."
"What about the body?"
"Dump it out the airlock when we're clear."
Han secured the drive housing cover plate, and they headed for the cockpit. It was like old times again, but old times he really didn't want to keep reliving.
"Where to?"
said Leia.
"Coruscant," Han said. for spare parts.
And nobody on our tail there, not trying to kill us anyway.
Luke can read me the riot act instead.
At least the droids and the Nogri will be happy to have us back. Han fired up the Falcon's drive and hoped for the best.
I was planning on coming back once I fixed the drive.
That's smart, said Leia.
The Falcon lifted clear, and Han laid in a course for Coruscant, ready to risk a jump to maximum velocity if Corellian traffic control had the same idea as the would-be assassin, now cooling rapidly in the engineering space below. But the vessel slipped through the shipping lanes and out to the jump point with no more than a routine automated transponder exchange.
I should have asked how that guy found us, said Han.
Leia didn't even raise an eyebrow.
I'll remember to leave you a moment for questions next time I stop someone trying to kill you.
Han took the Falcon as close to maximum speed as he dared. They spent the 3 hours it took to cover the 20,000 light-years to Coruscant, watching readouts and indicators, hoping the drive would hold together. By the time they reached Coruscant space, the Falcon had developed an uncharacteristic vibration that made her frame feel as if it were rolling on a sea every few seconds with an unnatural regularity. Leia leaned forward in her seat and checked drive temperatures and profiles with visible anxiety.
You're sure she's gonna land in one piece?
Han shrugged, knowing that wouldn't fool her one bit.
No, but trust me.
Plaza of the Core, Coruscant.
Lumaya was coming. She had answered Jason's summons. She was heading for Coruscant without argument or fear. And he could feel her. He found he could track her and her emotions, almost as if he could see her. Ben sat beside him, unusually quiet, hands in his lap.
Who are we waiting for?
Jason hated fooling Ben, but it has to be done. A woman who's going to do some research for us, military threat analysis. Her name's Shira. You might see her around from time to time.
But we could get analysis from the Security and Intelligence Council.
I like to have an independent view as well. You can never have too much information. Jason gave Ben a playful nudge. It helped him bury the shock that kept resurfacing after seeing his grandfather commit an atrocity. Talking of which, you haven't given me your threat analysis. Ben's eyes widened. He wanted to please.
Of what, Jason?
I'm waiting to hear your impressions of the locations you visited.
I didn't get much from the bomb site. Not that the CSF would let me get too close. But the Corellian Sanctuary was, well, scary.
Why?
I talked to some Corellians cleaning up the place. They really seemed to hate Coruscant. I don't get it.
Coruscant has had rifts with Corellia before.
But Jason, if they're talking about fighting us here...
Are they?
Well, a guy a little older than me. Probably just bravado.
Ben's sudden lurch into sober manhood, unsteady as it was, touched Jason.
It's always interesting to note what sparks wars. It's often something relatively small, but for some reason it just tips the situation into chaos.
That's the real enemy, isn't it?
Said Ben.
Chaos.
Jason almost shivered. It was another perceptive, wise beyond age comment of the kind Ben was increasingly prone to. It was almost a Sith sentiment. Ben would make a good apprentice, and for all the right reasons, his sense of duty was starting to become tangible.
I reckon so, said Jason.
The galaxy works best when things are certain. Jason kept an eye on the movement of citizens crossing the plaza. He knew Lumaya wouldn't be so crass as to turn up in her exotic triangular headdress and trailing a light whip. He could feel her coming, and it was almost a game to spot her by eyesight alone. About 100 meters away, Jason caught sight of a middle-aged woman in a neat red business suit, plain tunic and pants, that was so dark it verged on black. She had a matching scarf wrapped around her head that covered her entire face. Her eyes were obscured by a gauzy inset of some translucent silk. He knew it was Lumaya. He magnified his presence in the Force to get her attention, and she changed direction slightly as if she had spotted him, like anyone else might. The closer she came, the stronger the sense he had of a Sith making a conscious effort to conceal her presence in the Force, and almost succeeding.
Is that her?
Ben asked. Lumaya was close enough now for it to be obvious that she had seen Jason and was walking straight toward him. She must also have seen Ben, but she didn't react at any level. She stopped right in front of Jason, holding a black folio case in front of her with both hands almost like a shield. She had a soft, shapeless black bag over one shoulder. He suspected he knew what was in it.
"Master Solo," she said.
Nice touch. And even her voice was different.
"I'm not a master, but thank you, Shira." He turned deliberately to Ben. "This is my apprentice, Ben Skywalker. In an unofficial sense, of course."
"I'm sure I've seen you before," said Ben.
He sounded genuinely baffled, but there was no hint in his emotions that he recognized her as Brisha, the woman he had taken a dislike to at Bamiel.
"Nice to meet you, ma'am."
"You might have seen me around the university," said Lumaya.
"I'm only 13, said Ben.
"Really? Oh, perhaps not then."
She proffered her folio to Jason, suddenly a very convincing academic.
"I've assessed the current military capacities of Corellia and worlds most likely to support it. Would you like me to go through the reports with you?"
Good actress. Lamaya's skill at creating illusions extended into the physical world as well.
"I thought we might go to the Jedi Temple," said Jason.
Temptation and threat in one package for a Sith.
"There are quiet areas where we can talk. Ben, do you want to come too?"
Jason expected him to insist on coming. He was desperately anxious to learn, even if that meant sitting through meetings that even adults found boring. But Ben dropped his chin slightly as if to admit something.
"Is it okay if I visit Fleet Ops? Admiral Nyathol said I could."
Jason hadn't expected that.
"Of course."
Ben took his leave of them with a grave bow of the head and walked off across the plaza. Every centimeter, the young man.
"Luke's son is growing up fast,"
said Lumaya, lifting her veil clear of her eyes. "Don't worry, he doesn't recognize you."
"Why have you brought me here?"
"I wanted to discuss what we began to explore back in your home."
"Have you decided to let me help you achieve your destiny?"
"Yes."
"I'm at your disposal,"
she said quietly. "You've never been in the Jedi Temple, have you?"
"No, it'll be interesting."
"You can suppress your dark energy, I hope."
"Is that what you're testing, Jason?"
"I need to know how safe it is to have you near me," he said. "There's no better way to see if you'll be detected than to test if you can pass through the Jedi Temple unnoticed."
"I've hidden for decades,"
she replaced the veil.
"I can hide indefinitely, anywhere."
This was arcane mysticism on a scale that only a handful of people in the galaxy had ever needed to consider. And yet Jason found himself hailing an air taxi and getting into it with a Sith master, as mundane and everyday an act as he could imagine. He savored the incongruity of it. They didn't speak at all on the way to the temple.
"Set us down here, please, pilot."
Lumaya walked beside him up the promenade leading to the temple, and it felt as if she had cloaked herself completely. He could sense her unease, but any hint of darkness had been reduced to no more than the simmering passions found in any ordinary untrained human being. She passed through the huge doors of the imposing entrance and reacted just as any ordinary person with no force sensitivity would. She stopped in her tracks and stared. "It's quite an exercise in material magnificence, isn't it?" he said.
"A statement of power,"
Lumaya responded, wonderfully ambiguous.
"Let's see how much temptation you can stand."
He led her through the few areas where non-Jedi were permitted, and nobody stopped him. He was Jason Solo, and no one would challenge his right to invite a mundane guest. That much took no force techniques to achieve, because a confident air of purpose often opened more doors than an ID pass. He took her into the room of 1,000 fountains. If anything would force her to show her true intentions, even a glimmer of a drive for revenge, it was proximity to a place of meditation, and he would spot it. There was one more test beyond that, but he had to work toward it a little more carefully, and that was to put Lumaya within striking distance of Luke Skywalker. There was nothing like seeing an old love who was also an old enemy to unlock someone's true emotions. "I'd prefer you to stay on Coruscant," said Jason.
"If that's what you want."
"I'll arrange a safe house for you." This wasn't the place to carry on a conversation in any detail. "And I'll want to discuss what my further instruction might consist of."
"Speed will be important,"
Lumaya said. "Why?"
I feel what you can feel, that we're on the brink of another war. And there are some wars from which people might never recover.
He led her through the corridors to the main lobby, through which the passages to the High Council chamber passed. Lumaya should have been able to detect Luke's presence, but it was essential that Luke not detect hers. Jason concentrated on forming a force illusion around her, not to make her appear as anyone else, but to simply erase her presence as a Sith, in case her own subterfuge wasn't powerful enough to deceive Luke. Luke strode toward them and glanced back over his shoulder a couple of times as if someone were following him. He acknowledged Jason stiffly and paid Lumaya no more than polite attention, as if his mind was more on what was down the corridor. Jason strained to hold the force illusion steady, like a ball of heat within his chest that he had to balance to keep from touching his ribcage. That was exactly how it felt. And Lumaya somehow nestled in miniature within that ball of heat, felt not vengeful or trying to disguise her intentions, but genuinely worried about being discovered before her work was complete. Luke seemed baffled. Suddenly, Jason realized that it wasn't anything in the office at the end of the corridor that was distracting Luke. He could sense something amiss and wasn't sure where it was coming from. Luke was sensing Lumaya, but very faintly, Jason knew it.
Good morning, Uncle.
Hello, Jason. Luke's gaze rested briefly on Lumaya, but he concentrated on Jason.
Morning, ma'am. Where's Ben?
Admiral Niathal is showing him around the Fleet Ops Center. Have you time for a calf?
Luke shook his head.
Sorry, perhaps later.
He was making an effort to disguise his uneasiness with Jason in front of a stranger. He nodded politely at Lumaya, and then glanced briefly behind him again.
Ma'am?
They watched him go.
Eventually, Lumaya let out a breath. You didn't have to do that.
Jason kept the force cover in place.
I think I did. My issues with Luke Skywalker are long over, Jason.
Really?
Yes. If I wanted to get to him, I wouldn't need you as a route. Please understand what's at stake here. This is beyond our own little personal grievances.
She picked up her folio case.
I should go now.
He felt a surge of real anger in her. He believed her. Events were unfolding as they were, because it was his destiny. He grew more accepting of it by the hour. I'll see you out, he said.
Corellian Quarter, Galactic City, Coruscant.
I should have told Jason where I was going.
Ben hadn't exactly lied to Jason. He really had visited the Fleet Command Center, and Admiral Niathal really had showed him around the ops room. It just hadn't taken as long as he had expected. And now he was still desperately curious about the Corellians who lived on Coruscant, and who were now quite possibly what Niathal called the enemy within. Ben found himself in one of the Corellian neighborhoods near the heart of Galactic City, wandering along the catwalks among shops and homes and businesses. He was looking for an engineering workshop called Saiz, owned by Barrett's family. Ben was passing in front of a small grocery store when he heard the distinctive thrum of a large vessel behind him. He looked back to see a Coruscant Security Force assault ship, the kind the police use for patrols, making slow progress down the skylane with its side hatches open. Maybe the officers were looking for someone. But then he heard a booming voice from the vessel's public address system.
Do not use your water supply. I repeat, contamination has been found in the water supply. And as a precaution, all water has been cut off. Do not use your supply, because water standing in the pipes may be contaminated. Please listen to your news stations for updates.
The ship passed, repeating its emergency message as it advanced. And Ben saw four blue-uniformed CSF officers standing inside the crew bay, one with a voice projector clutched in his hand.
Contaminated with what?
Said Ben, but he was talking to himself. People had come out of their homes and businesses to stand on the walkway and stare after the assault ship. One woman came out of a tap cap with a holonews receiver and set it on one of the tables outside, and customers crowded around. Ben paused to watch. The news channel was running a live report from someone at one of the water company's pumping stations. Problems with utilities were rare on Coruscant,
but it still seemed to Ben like a lot of fuss for a routine problem. Then he heard the reporter use the word sabotage.
"What's he saying?"
Ben asked, trying to peer between the customers for a better look.
"Someone put toxic chemicals in the water supply," said the TapCap woman. "They've had to shut down 10 pumping stations, and that means half of Central Galactic City hasn't got any water."
She slapped a cleaning cloth down on the table, clearly angry.
"Which means I have to shut the calf until they sort it out."
"If it's sabotage, you know who'll get the blame,"
said a man clutching a small boy by the hand.
"Us." "Could be anybody."
Ben leaned over the edge of the safety rail on the walkway to see what was happening on the levels above and below him. People had done exactly what the TapCaf customers had. They gathered outside their shops and homes, talking and arguing. He could hear voices carrying. Traffic had slowed to a crawl. The police public address system boomed in the distance.
"Jason,"
Ben spoke quietly into his comlink, but Jason wasn't receiving. The message service clicked in.
"Jason, I'm in the Corellian Quarter and..."
He searched for the words, but there was no point alarming Jason.
"I'm heading home."
Ben's sense of danger was becoming acute now. There was anger and violence building up exactly like the pressure before a thunderstorm. He could feel it pressing on his temples, making his sinuses ache, telling him to get away, run, hide, at an instinctive level. He hoped he'd learn to read it better one day. Right now, it was uncontrolled and animal. He ran back the way he had come, 200 meters to the nearest taxi platform. An air taxi was sitting on its propulsors, hovering silently over a dark pool of shadow. The pilot, a thin-faced human with a shaved head, glanced up from his holozine and opened the hatch.
"Senate District, please," said Ben.
"Where exactly?"
"Rotunda Zone."
"Nah, I'm avoiding the center."
The pilot looked at Ben as if he'd just arrived from Tatooine.
"There's a riot going on over the water contamination. Should you be out on your own, lad?"
Ben was beginning to wonder the same thing himself.
"How close can you take me to the zone, then?"
The pilot sucked his teeth thoughtfully.
"The intersection of Sky Lanes 472 and 23. 2 blocks away. Will that do?"
"Okay."
Ben sat in the back seat of the taxi with one hand on the hilt of his lightsaber, fidgeting. The taxi slowed and pulled in at a landing platform. Ben could see police speeders ahead at the intersection of 2 sky lanes, diverting traffic the hard way. A CSF assault ship swept overhead as he stepped out onto the walkway, and his instinct was to follow its path.
"So what are you going to do when you get there?"
It was a good question, but instead of answering it rationally, Ben just headed for where his force senses told him he was needed. He raced down the walkway in the opposite direction from the rest of the pedestrians, who were doing the sensible thing and moving away from the riot area. When he rounded the corner, he found himself at the back of a mob facing the Corellian embassy. The building was under siege. There was no other way to describe the barrage of missiles smashing against the permaglass front of the building and piling up in its marble forecourt. The CSF assault ship hovered overhead. Ben could see officers taking aim with rifles and then lowering them again.
"You scum!
You poison the water!"
Ben dodged a lump of masonry that cleared the heads of the mob in front of him and landed at his feet, sending fragments flying.
"They should have pulverized your whole planet, not just stinking center point."
The crowd roared and surged forward before falling back again, nearly knocking Ben flat. He was responsible for what was happening. He'd started this with the raid on center point. In front of the embassy, a dozen Corellians, Ben assumed that was who they were, braved the hail of permacrete and snatched the lumps up to hurl them back over their heads of the CSF line. One of the men had a blood-smeared gash across his forehead, but he seemed oblivious to it. A CSF captain moved forward with a squad of officers, and Ben heard the Corellian tell him that they were supposed to be protected here. They were supposed to be safe. And then there was a volley of shots from above, like projectile weapons firing and the air filled with acrid smoke. It burned Ben's eyes and mouth. Dispersal gas. The CSF must have fired canisters from the assault ship hovering overhead. The crowd should have scattered, but instead, people seemed to close in on each other, and Ben was caught up in the panic. He fell. He was being trampled. Legs filled his field of vision, and just as he curled instinctively to shield his head, a gloved blue arm reached out and grabbed him by the front of his tunic, pulling him free.
"Stupid kid,"
It was a CSF officer. The man had rescued him. Ben struggled to his knees, eyes streaming.
Come on, get out of here.
Ben's attention snapped suddenly from his own predicament to a point behind the officer. He focused on a face he knew, a boy with short blonde hair, Barrett Saeed. And Ben was staring at a blaster aimed not at him, but at the officer's back.
He didn't think. He just pulled out his lightsaber with his free hand and saw the bright blue blade collide with a stream of white energy, deflecting it.
It took a second, and when he blinked again to clear his streaming eyes, he saw Barrett disappearing into the melee. The police officer stared at his lightsaber for a moment, one hand on his own blaster.
It was a rock,
Ben lied.
Someone threw something at you.
The officer pulled him to his feet. His face was streaked with gas-induced tears, too. He hadn't put on his respirator in time.
You're fast, kid. Let's get you back to the temple, shall we?
I'll call my master. He'll collect me.
He wiped his face on the sleeve of his robe, nose streaming, and opened his comm link again.
Jason, can you hear me?
There was just the usual quiet hiss of a link that wasn't being answered, and the click of the message recorder.
Jason, something terrible is happening.
Slave 1, pre-flight panel check for Vohai.
Boba Fett had rarely carried passengers, not live or voluntary ones anyway. The presence of this strange girl in his ship, which was more of a home than anything he owned made of stone or permacrete, bothered him. And yet he simply couldn't walk away from her. Mir Tegev had a piece of his past. That mattered a lot when he was running out of future.
You normally board ships with total strangers?
Mirta slung her bag over one shoulder.
Are you going to kill me?
Nobody's paying me to.
That's what I thought.
She boarded Slave 1 via the cargo hatch and went to follow him through to the cockpit, but he turned to block her path and gestured aft.
You stay here. I don't like co-pilots. Stay put, or I'll lock you in one of the cells.
Mirta didn't show the slightest dissent. She just paused and looked around, then sat down on a crate that was secured to the port bulkhead. She opened her bag and rummaged in it before pulling out a chunk of something that she unwrapped and began gnawing. Fett stared at her.
Dinner, she said. I always carry rations, just in case.
Fett settled into his seat and fired up the ship's drives. He laid in a course to Vohai. His stomach rumbled. Maybe he should have grabbed some of Baveen's coin crabs after all. Fett dozed, reclining in his seat. When he slept, it was never deeply. The navigation sensors woke him with an insistent pulsing tone to warn him Slave 1 had dropped out of hyperspace, and he snapped upright and alert. His joints hurt. He ignored the pain. In the viewscreen, Vohai grew larger until it was the entire sky. Fett punched up the local data on his console and began his descent. Fett disguised Slave 1's armaments with a sensor screen and prepared to land. If anything went wrong, he had the firepower of a small warship to get out of trouble. Turbo lasers, ion cannon, torpedoes, and concussion missiles. He added conventional armor-piercing detonite ordnance on the last refit, just in case he was ever low on power and stuck in a tight corner. Leaving things to chance was for amateurs.
Fett!
He glanced up at the screen that gave him a complete view of the cargo bay. Mirta had stood up and was stretching her arms like an athlete, pulling one arm across her body, then the other.
Are you taking me with you?
No.
So you're just going to leave me locked in here while you go off?
I wouldn't let anything happen to this ship. You're safe, as long as she is.
Galactic City Public Landing Area, 337/B.
The Falcon stood in one of the hundreds of open air bays that flanked the landing strip. Just another aging vessel. Her hull made the occasional click as the metal cooled, and an ominous pool of coolant was growing under the drive housing. Han had put a pail under the leak to collect it, and now we could hear the fluid running over the rim of the container. The pipework around the drive had sheared at the welds.
Well, said Leia at last, staring into the distance, that was character forming.
Han stood and walked back up the loading ramp. He went down to the drive bay where he could smell scorched alloy and the throat-tingling whiff of the fluid.
Stang. He was tired of all this. Was it ever going to end?
A year with Leia, a normal year when nothing happened. Nothing went wrong. None of the kids was in danger. Was that too much to ask? When he came out through the main starboard hatch again, Jason was sitting on the ramp with his arm around Leia's shoulders, forehead resting against hers.
"You okay, Jason?" asked Han. "You look worn out."
"Not as worn out as you."
"Things have been a little tense around here. Thrakken's put out a contract on us. You too."
"It'll be fascinating to see him try." Jason's frowns seem permanent now. "But you..."
"Hey, I might be ancient to you, but I can take Thrakken, thanks."
"My actions on Centerpoint provoked him. I feel responsible for your safety."
"You leave me to worry about Thrakken," said Han. "It won't be the first time. Just wait. He'll send Fett. I can handle Fett."
Leia gave a small snort of amusement.
"You can brandish walking sticks at each other. He's not getting any younger either. Why would Thrakken hire him?"
"Because he thinks Fett will psych me out."
"He thinks right then."
Han took it as making light of her fears, but Jason didn't seem amused.
"Come back to my apartment, Dad." His tone was almost pleading. "Just in case someone's got your apartment here under..."
Jason stopped and looked around. Something had distracted him. Something Han couldn't see or hear, as usual. Then Han caught a flash of orange out of the corner of his eye and turned to see a Galactic Alliance pilot walking between laid-up vessels on the apron of the landing strip. For an illogical moment, his stomach churned, and then he focused on long brown hair pulled back in a tail and the fact that the pilot had an astromech droid keeping pace beside her.
Jaina, in a pilot's uniform. "So when did she get that out of the wardrobe?" said Han. "She didn't tell us she was going back on active service."
"No fighting," Leia said firmly.
Han was dismayed at how fast he moved from being glad to be alive to challenging his daughter's choices. He was still relieved to see her. She just reached out and squeezed his hand, oddly formal, and then did the same to Leia. She simply nodded at Jason, which didn't bode well.
"I'm not going to ask any obvious questions," Jaina patted R2's dome, "but I thought you could use some help with repairs."
"Thanks."
Han ignored Leia's warning, and the comment was out of his mouth before he could think too hard.
"And why are you decked out in an orange flight suit?"
"Because I'm doing my job, Dad."
"Did Zek get you back into this?"
Jaina could become her mother in an instant. She had that same look of sad patience.
"Dad, I'm 31. I'm making my own decisions, and you forget what I am sometimes."
"I never forget you're a Jedi, but that doesn't mean you should get dragged into the Alliance's wars against Corellia."
"Dad," said Jaina softly, "I meant that I'm a fighter pilot. That's what you forget. I volunteered for active duty because this is my job."
"You can't seriously believe that the Alliance is right, sweetheart," said Han.
"Dad, maybe I do and maybe I don't, but that's not the issue. I'm in uniform, and that means I front up and earn it regardless of my personal views. That's what service is about."
Han took it as a rebuke. It wasn't, of course, but he knew deep down that he tended to emotion in wartime rather than cool professionalism. Yes, Jaina was a fighter pilot. He owed her the respect due to a professional warrior.
"I'd better get back to base," she said.
Leia stood up and Jaina gave her a hurried kiss on the cheek. Han didn't give Jaina the chance to duck his, but Jason hovered on the edge of the group, seeming to want to make peace with her and getting no reaction.
"Wouldn't do for me to be advertising that the Solos are back. Watch your six, okay?"
"Take care of yourself, Jaina," said Jason.
"And you."
Jaina turned and took a couple of strides before glancing back at Jason.
"You don't feel right to me lately, Jason. Are you in trouble?"
Jason smiled as if he was getting her to thaw a little and was relieved. "Just busy, that's all."
Jason Solo's apartment, Rotunda Zone, Coruscant.
Luke knew Ben would come back here sooner or later. He paced around the lobby of the apartment building, pausing occasionally to stare through the transparasteel doors. Something had happened to Ben. Although all of Luke's force senses told him his son was alive and unharmed, but he wouldn't answer his link. And Jason had disappeared from the force. Luke picked up echoes of him sporadically and then lost him again. He looked at Mara, wondering if she was able to detect their nephew any better than he could. "Nothing," she said, and shook her head, apparently knowing exactly what was on his mind. It wasn't that difficult. He'd agonized about little else today.
"Look, it's chaos out there. Ben's smart enough to avoid trouble. Let's take it easy."
Take it easy. What had he come to when Mara was the one urging him to calm down? He wondered how much of his own anxiety was having nothing concrete to do yet in the coming war. War. He'd thought it again. Somewhere along the line in the last few days, it had changed from a threat to a certainty. Luke tried to separate it in his mind from the force dreams of the man in the hooded cloak that still plagued him. He turned back to the turbolift and watched the cascade of lights on the floor indicator panel for a while he heard Mara say,
"Now let's not be hasty, honey, okay? Ah! Oh no."
Luke spun around to see Ben. The boy's eyes were swollen and streaming, and he wiped his nose as if he'd been sobbing his heart out. Mara stood frozen for a second, and then went to wrap him in her arms.
"What happened, sweetheart? Tell me what's wrong."
Ben coughed hard.
"I got a whiff of riot gas."
"Oh no."
Mara put her fingertips under his chin and turned his face to one side to examine him.
"Can you breathe okay?"
"It's wearing off, Mom."
He submitted to a hug.
"I was in the wrong place at the wrong time."
"Let's get you to the med center for a checkup," said Luke quietly.
"I said I'm fine, Dad. It wears off."
Ben sounded annoyed.
"Aren't you doing something about the water situation?"
Mara intervened.
"The city authorities are looking after that. Why don't we go up to the apartment and get you cleaned up?"
Mara steered Ben toward the turbolift.
"Where's Jason?"
Ben stopped at the lift doors.
"I don't know. I was coming back from Fleet ComSen."
They rode the turbolift in an uncomfortable silence, punctuated only by Ben's sniffs and coughs. His robe was dirty, as if he'd been rolling on the ground. When they got to the apartment, his first reaction was to head to the refresher. He stopped, a few paces back from the doors, and turned on his heel.
"Bottled water in the conservator?"
he said. The water supply to most of the center of the city was still cut off. Luke turned on the taps in the kitchen to drain off any water still standing in the pipes and header tanks. There was no point taking any chances.
"I can feel that you're angry, Dad," said Ben hoarsely. "But it's not Jason's fault. It's mine. I decided not to go with him when he had his meeting."
He seemed about to expand on that, but checked himself visibly.
"I've learned my lesson."
"It's okay."
Mara caught Luke's eyes as Ben covered his face with the washcloth for a moment. Her expression said it all. "Is this the rebellious son we know?"
"Let me get you something to drink. You sound awful."
They ended up in the living room, the three of them sitting as far apart from one another as the room would allow. Ben sipped a glass of juice and occasionally broke into a hacking, uncontrollable cough that left him wheezing with tears streaming down his face. His sobriety stunned Luke. But they could sit in silence for a while. They didn't have to talk. Almost out of habit, Luke let himself drift to pick up impressions from the apartment and felt nothing beyond a sense of unease, as if Jason was having problems. A man having a difficult love affair, Luke thought. Maybe that's all it is. The doors opened, and Jason walked in with Han and Leia. It should have been a family reunion of sorts, and a relieved one at that. But the expression on Han's face said otherwise. Luke decided to take the lead.
"It's okay, Jason," he said.
"We made Ben let us in. He got caught up in the rioting, dispersal gas."
"I'm fine," Ben sighed. "It's wearing off."
"Well, we've all had a little drama in our day then." Jason ushered Leia and Han into the room. He radiated only concern and sympathy, nothing dark at all. "Mom and Dad nearly crash-landed, and Dad was nearly assassinated." Mar got up to plump cushions around Leia.
"Sounds like a regular day in this family."
"We'll be heading back home as soon as we can find a replacement ship."
Han barely made eye contact with Luke.
"The Falcon's not so hot right now. R2's carrying out repairs."
"Why didn't you let me know?"
Han shrugged.
"We were kind of busy, trying not to plummet in flames."
Luke tasted a chance to broker some peace, at least within his own family.
"Corellia doesn't have to be home, Han. Come back. You're safer here anyway.
Yeah, but there's the small matter of my being Corellian, which isn't fashionable right now. And your buddy's attacking my homeworld because it won't roll over and be the Alliance's stooge while it plays at being the Empire again.
Han, how long have we known each other?
Long enough for you to know that the way the Alliance is behaving should give you that proverbial bad feeling. The kind I get.
Han, Leia said. It was a quiet warning. Knock it off. No, let him have his say. Luke was suddenly conscious of Ben watching him, and that this wasn't the way he wanted his son to see him, starting a verbal brawl with his best friend, when all everyone needed right then was to be glad they were still alive. I happen to think you're playing Thrakken Sal Solo's game with this Corellian knee-jerk response to any suggestion of being team players.
Whoa there, kid. Whose team?
Yours? You can take this independence thing too far.
Yeah? And you were quick enough to use my sense of rugged individuality when it suited you in the past, pal. But I can't pick it up and put it down that easy. It's who I am.
Let's not argue over this, said Luke.
We just did.
Han shook his head. He stood staring at Luke for a few moments, looking more bewildered than angry.
They use you every time. Show me a government that hasn't used Jedi to legitimize its actions. You're like some galactic rubber stamp.
Why are you backing Omis?
You, of all people. Does the name Palpatine ring a bell?
That was different. He was Sith.
And Omis is a jerk. Or at least a puppet for a whole mess of other jerks. Well, count me out. You've got my kids working for you, and that'll have to be enough.
Oh, boy, said Mara. But Luke could sense her embarrassment and fear. I love to see the grown-ups in action. Jason, let's make some calf for Leia while these two spray testosterone around the room. Come on, Ben, you too. Yeah, I've had enough of this as well, said Leia. She got up and stood between the two men, all weary annoyance. Cut it out, Han. And you, Luke, we've got enough problems without having a civil war inside this family. Luke sighed and held out his hand, genuinely wishing he hadn't said a word.
Han didn't take it. I'm going to see a man about a ship, he said, and stalked out.
Jason walked up behind Luke and patted his shoulder. I'm sorry, Uncle Luke. If I had known you were here, I'd have called ahead to say they were coming. Dad's pretty strung out right now, and it's not just the politics. It's Jaina and Thrakken, and now the Falcon. As Jason turned away from him, Luke caught a very faint touch of something familiar in his mind, almost like a trace of familiar perfume. It was an echo. It felt ancient. Luke almost opened his mouth to inhale it. Then he realized what it was. He knew who it was. For a moment, he thought it was emanating from Jason. And then he realized it was purely coincidence. The revelation hit him like a body blow. He understood his forced dream perfectly now. I know who the Hooded Man is. I know now. And it's not a man at all. Luke sensed the barely perceptible trace in the Force of a woman who had once loved him. The dark Jedi called Shira Bree, who had degenerated into Lumaya. A Sith who was more cyborg than human. A woman who hated him too, but whom he thought had vanished forever. She was back. She's here. I know she's here. Lumaya is here. Jason stared into Luke's face. What's wrong, Uncle? Shall I warn Jason that Lumaya has come back? Will he listen to me? It's nothing, said Luke. Just unhappy memories.
Offices of Chief of State Omas, Senate Building, Coruscant.
The HNE holocam hovered patiently as Chief Omis gave an earnest interview about the safety of Galactic City's water supply. Jason stood back and watched from the sofa in the corner of the vast office.
Extra security measures are now in place at all water company stations, said Omis. I'm confident there won't be a repeat of the sabotage earlier this week.
Do you believe we're facing a genuine terrorist threat, or is this a random act?
Said the reporter.
It's a genuine threat, and it appears to be escalating.
Omis didn't hesitate.
Even if we're not dealing with an identifiable formal terrorist organization,
If you've identified that level of threat, then, do you feel you're doing enough to protect Coruscant citizens?
This time, Omis did pause for breath.
I can assure you that our security services are taking every possible action.
But you've been criticized by some politicians for not going far enough.
We've gone as far as the current law permits.
Some of your colleagues are calling for the internment of resident Corellians.
That's a very big step. We're not at war.
By the time we are, won't it be too late?
Omis managed a regretful smile.
Let's not be hasty.
Jason's eye was caught by movement in the outer lobby, visible through a transparent-steel panel. The outline was broken by etched designs, but he recognized Senator Gasil, chair of the Security and Intelligence Council. As soon as the HNE reporter had finished the interview and left, Gasil slipped into Omis's office.
It's not my job on the line, he said, pulling up a chair. But I think our friend from the media had a point.
I'm not comfortable with taking a hardline approach, said Omis, and it might not be my decision to make.
Gasil gestured over his shoulder to the city beyond the room-width windows.
Take a look out there. We have a trillion people on this world. A few thousand, a tiny percentage, have been hurt directly by terrorism. The rest, though, think it's about to happen to them. And that's what we're dealing with here. Perception. Public confidence.
Omis raised one eyebrow.
Spin?
Reassurance.
Jason had seen enough to add Gasil to his list of allies along with Niathal. Fear breeds its own problems, said Jason. We have to limit that. There was a moment's silence. Omis's shoulders dropped, and his presence in the force was like a small piece of ice melting into nothing. His reluctance was tangible.
Mara Skywalker isn't willing to take on a security role, he said. You, however, seem equally able and a great deal more willing to do a thankless task.
Define the task, said Jason.
Fill the gap between the army and the Coruscant security force.
Why are you talking directly to me and bypassing the Jedi Council? Jason asked. I'm not even in the military.
Because we're not asking you as a Jedi, said Gasil. We're asking you as Jason Solo, and you'll be given a commission and a rank, as Colonel. I'd bet the Council doesn't want to be tainted by messy stuff like this.
They won't like it.
Let's cut the PR speak. As a democracy, we've never been very adept at running secret police. You know, the kind of shock troops that Vader had when...
Gasil trailed off.
Sorry, Jason. No offense.
It's all right. Jason meant it. I'm not ashamed of Anakin Skywalker, and there are positive things I can learn from his example. The office was suddenly and totally silent, as if both Gasil and Omis were holding their breath until Jason said it was okay to exhale.
Do we take that as a yes?
Gasil asked. Jason swallowed. I'll need a security force to deal with it. Omis looked to Gasil and then back at Jason.
CSF's anti-terrorist unit is yours to command.
No, I need my own team from the military and a few other sources. A team that's visibly separate from the CSF. If civilian police are seen raiding homes and rounding up residents, it's going to make ordinary policing hard. Politically, it has to be separate. A Galactic Alliance special guard, if you like. Gasil nodded.
I agree. You have to keep the secret police separate from the nice, polite officers who police the street. Send a message that ordinary law-abiding Coruscanti have nothing to fear, while demonstrating maximum force to the enemy.
Omis was sitting on the edge of his seat, elbows braced on the desk, one fist clasping the other as he stared down in defocus.
You said rounding up.
Internment, said Gasil. And that's not just spin. Corellians got at the water supply pretty easily. One relatively small bomb shut 10 sky lanes for half a day. It takes very few people to cause a lot of disruption on a crowded planet like this. And let me remind you that this is also a nervous planet, not long recovered from another war. Makes folks paranoid.
I'd like to recruit Captain Shivu and a team of his choosing, Jason said. I'd also like a company of Special Forces troops, and I need access to Alliance intelligence data.
You'll want NRI officers then.
No. This has to be seen as a fresh approach to the problem. Omis radiated unease.
We've taken a step toward martial law.
Gasil interrupted.
But this is technically a Coruscanti matter. It's not a Senate issue. You have the powers to put a temporary order in place for the planet.
But Coruscant isn't just a planet. It's the Galactic Alliance, too. So I want full support for this, or things will fall apart when we start applying those special measures, as you like to call them. People tend to lose their nerve when they see force applied.
A majority of the SIC would be legitimate authority to implement special measures.
And you can deliver that majority, can you?
Said Omis. I'll call a special meeting now. Give me 24 hours.
Gasil patted Jason on the shoulder with evident relief and left. Omis, sitting behind his desk with the air of a man in a heavily defended trench, watched Jason as if expecting him to break bad news. May I start assembling the personnel I need now? Jason asked. Then we'll be ready to move when the authority is given.
Very well. Let me speak to Admiral Pellion.
Omis opened the comlink set into his desk. It was the same pleak wood and lapis as the desk itself.
And I'll get Shivu seconded to you.
You can explain all this to the Supreme Commander and CSF?
I'm very good at being plausible, said Omis. But I doubt if CSF is going to object.
Senate Lobby 513, Senate Building, Coruscant, 0835 hours.
Admiral Pellion resigned as Supreme Commander of the Galactic Alliance Defense Force at 800. A little too late for the main morning holonews bulletins, but early enough to interrupt drive-time programming for a few moments. He had objected strenuously in private to the powers granted to the Galactic Alliance Guard, but said nothing publicly. He was an old man. Nobody outside Omis's cabinet, and presumably the military, thought it unusual that he should let a younger officer take his place. Jason watched the news on the chamber's holoscreen sound muted. While he wasn't surprised that Pellion had finally gone, he still wasn't prepared for the speed at which events were moving. He wondered if Lumaya had influenced matters somehow. But she denied it. She sat beside him in the deserted lobby chamber, document case on her lap, face invisible under the dark red cowl and veil. The chamber was normally full of lobbyists and media seeking audience with senators, but it was too early for the majority of the power brokers to be about their business.
Tell me you didn't influence Admiral Pellion, said Jason quietly.
I didn't need to. He's furious about your appointment, and he's old.
Lumaya's voice was so low that Jason almost had to amplify it with the force in his mind.
By the time he decides he wants to return, it will be too late for him to stop you.
The resignation of an elderly chief of defense was no shocking news story for HNE, merely a chance to recap on Pellion's distinguished career. But the succession of Admiral Nyathol was significant. She was known as a hardliner. Jason switched the wall-mounted holoscreen to a Corellia news station where her appointment was provoking reaction. Thrakken Sal Solo, head of state, was holding forth on the certain threat to Corellia. With the audio muted, Jason lip-read. Sal Solo announced that Centerpoint Station would be brought back online for the defense of Corellia within 3 months.
You have an interesting selection of relatives,
said Lumaya. All the more reason for me to do the decent thing and sort out the problems the various branches of my family appear to be visiting upon the galaxy.
You're more like your grandfather than you think.
Lumaya knew Anakin Skywalker as her Lord Vader. He'd selected her as an intelligence agent. I haven't failed to notice the parallels, said Jason.
And that makes you wary?
I've seen the steps he took. Literally, Grandfather, I stood behind you and watched you kill children. I have to do things a little differently. On the holoscreen, Corellian political commentators had worked themselves into a froth of outrage at Nyathol's appointment. Jason stood up. Lumaya said,
Tell me what your next task is.
Internment, said Jason. We're confining Corellians until this current wave of terror is contained. Come on, let me introduce you to the officer who will be in the Chief of State's office within the year.
Corellian Quarter, Coruscant.
Ben knew he was taking an insane risk by going back to the Corellian neighborhood, but he had to find Barrett. This time he made sure he was wearing regular clothes, not Jedi robes. He worried that he was a coward for hiding his status, but a sensible voice inside him said that there was no point in getting beaten up before he found out something useful. That was pragmatism, as Jason called it. He sauntered along the walkways, stopping to stare at things that made him curious, reminding himself that he was a 13-year-old boy and not a soldier this time. Nobody seemed to notice him. All he wanted to do was look Barrett in the face and ask a simple question. What made him see Coruscant as the enemy? The Corellia neighborhood was quieter today, as if people were waiting for something to happen. Some of the shops were closed. Ben stopped at a grocery store to pick up a bottle of Fizz Aid and asked for directions to the Sai'i workshops. He drank as he walked the kilometer or so to Barrett's family business. Ben found two men who looked about his father's age leaning over a large repulsor drive with Hydra spanners in their hands. They glanced up sharply, but relaxed when they saw him. Just a kid.
"Where's Barrett?"
he asked casually. One of the men stood up.
"Barrett? Barrett! Someone here to see you."
Barrett emerged from a storeroom, wiping his hands on a rag. He stared at Ben for a few moments as if he didn't recognize him, and then didn't look pleased to see him. He walked out into the open air, and Ben followed him a little way from the workshops. There was an appetizing smell of frying and spices coming from an open doorway.
"Did you find your missing diamonds?"
Ben asked. He meant the gems made out of Corellian's ashes in the sanctuary.
"Did anyone give them back?"
"No,"
said Barrett.
"The sort of people who smash memorials don't have consciences."
It wasn't a good start. Ben plunged in.
"I saw you outside the embassy the other day."
"What were you doing there?"
"Getting a face full of gas."
"Yeah, so was I."
"When I say I saw you, I mean I saw you with a weapon."
"Everyone carries a piece, even you."
"But why shoot at a cop?"
"You gonna turn me in?"
"I just want to know why you did it. The officer never did anything to you. He was just trying to stop a fight."
"Coruscant's against us. The Alliance is trying to kill us. We've got to defend ourselves."
"But that's not people. The CSF wasn't trying to do anything to you. How can you shoot at someone who wasn't aiming at you?"
"You wouldn't understand."
"I want to."
"You wouldn't."
"If you're that scared of us all, why are you still living here?"
"You'd like that, wouldn't you? Kick us out? Send us back?"
Ben didn't know how to respond.
"You think you're at war with us?"
"We are. Maybe not properly, but we are."
"How can you think that when you live here? If you really believe that, how can you even want to live here?"
Ben stood staring at Barrett in complete incomprehension.
"Come on, Barrett,"
one of the men yelled.
"You gonna be yakking there all day? Got jobs to do. Get on with it."
Barrett looked at Ben as if he was memorizing his face.
"Gotta go. Thanks for not turning me in."
He walked back toward the workshop. Ben wandered away, the half-full bottle of Fizz Aid still clutched in his hand, and wondered if he should have reported Barrett to CSF. It had never crossed his mind.
Jabi Town, Corellian Quarter, Coruscant, 0400 hours.
This neighborhood hated the planet on which it found itself. And that was not a political or military assessment of the risk, but Jason Solo's certainty of what he detected in the Force. Jason could sense the resentment, anger, and danger that was simmering in this Corellian district of Galactic City. And that was why he decided to begin his operations as the new commander of the Galactic Alliance Guard by raiding Jabi Town. It was hard to seal off a neighborhood in a place like Coruscant. The intersections were three-dimensional and required six CSF Traffic Division repulsor lift ships for each Skylane junction that Jason needed to have blocked off. He stood on the platform of a military assault vessel, a matte gray gunship, not unlike its CSF counterpart, watching two of the CSF ships hover into position. "Are you okay, Ben?" Ben stepped forward. He hadn't said a word. He clutched his lightsaber hilt in one hand, and Jason sensed he was agitated rather than excited. He had changed irrevocably from a boy who found missions and adventure to a young man who had a healthy degree of fear in him.
I'm fine, Jason.
Comlink working? Ben fumbled with his right ear.
Do I really have to wear it?
You need to be able to hear what's going on between squads. You can't do that using the Force. Jason turned to the five squads of soldiers of 967 Commando in the troop bay, elite shock troopers, whose specialty was siege busting and personnel retrieval, all of them hand-picked because they were Coruscant-born and bred, and human, with no possibility of secret sympathies with other worlds. Among them were volunteers from the CSF's anti-terrorist unit, selected and vouched for by Shivu. They would be loyal. Jason had come to value loyalty very highly lately. He couldn't see their faces behind their riot visors and sealed black helmets, but they exuded no more than a sense of concentration and a little apprehension of the level that was normal for troops going into battle. On the other side of the Corellian district, Shivu stood by with more squads, ready to storm buildings to search, subdue, and arrest. Jason opened the comlink looped over his ear. Squad commanders, no discharge of weapons unless you're fired upon first. Shivu's voice cut in.
Could I suggest we update that to unless we perceive a real and immediate threat, sir? Takes account of grenades and other weapons.
A good idea, Captain. Revise that. Stand by, said Jason. Ben's lightsaber sprang into life, the blue light illuminating the troop bay. The 967 sergeant crackled audibly as his armor systems created feedback in the assault vessel's public address system. He adjusted something on the side of his helmet. Silence descended. Around 2,000 people lived in this block of buildings, and Jason had 500 troops deployed. Not a good ratio, but it was enough to get the job done. The assault ship hovered level with the walkway, and he leapt down from the bay, followed by the 967, who spread immediately to stack either side of doorways. Above them, Jason could feel the adrenaline-fueled presence of roof teams and snipers.
Go, 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 said Jason.